is not a test. This is your emergency broadcast system announcing the commencement of the annual purge.
Because I just went gay all of a sudden.
Weapons of class 4 and lower have been authorized for use during the purge.
We use words like honor, code, loyalty.
Government officials of ranking 10 have been granted immunity from the purge and shall not be harmed.
There is no racial bigotry here. Here you are all equally worthless.
Commencing at the siren, any and all crime, including murder, will be legal for 12 continuous hours.
You can act like a man! What's the matter with you?
Police, fire, and emergency medical services will be unavailable until tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. when the purge concludes.
General, would you care to step outside?
Blessed be our new founding fathers and America, a nation reborn. May God be with you all.
Just a straight face, straight lace. Just, we're gonna speak with our thumbs like this underneath our fingers, like the president's do.
Ladies and gentlemen,
today
you're gonna have to go with the lip bite.
Talk about serious matters today.
Oh, I've got a pocket Barack Obama. You think I don't? I do.
Thomas, I don't think you heard, but Noonan was hating on our background, like straight out. Like, I can't wait for you to go back.
I can send her a background right now. It just won't have a beautiful name on it.
I don't know how to fuck with this shit, so stop, Marco.
Listen, Noonan scolded you. Look, I am here for comic relief and to talk about cupcakes. I got two jobs.
Well, I'm supposed to be a serious professional right now.
Welcome to the locker room.
Welcome to the locker room on that note. For serious professionals and fans of cupcakes today.
And dick and fart jokes.
And dick and fart jokes. Because that's what America has been reduced to. America is a giant dick and fart joke right now.
It's very, very much so.
I have heard, this is now the locker room episodes are topical, so we always, you know, mention what time we try to discuss things you could listen to later. But the bottom line is this is happening right before the 2020 U.S. presidential election. So it is silly season, like nobody's business. And the scandal that just broke is the Hunter Biden laptop, crack smoking, underage teenage girl, shit ass eating. I don't know. It's bad. But what's interesting is, according to, this is anecdotal, I have no evidence to back this up, but a buddy of mine, allegedly, this is an unpopular political hypothesis.
That's it.
I literally had a buddy of mine send me a screenshot of the number one most Googled search right now, which is Hunter Biden laptop. And then immediately after it, there's a spike in the second most searched term on the internet right now that happens immediately after it. And that search term is, can I change my vote? So we're with all of that craziness, we're back in the locker room. I am Tom.
I am Marco.
And we have Nune back with us. She was going to be back last week. However, due to circumstances beyond her control, we had to bump that to this week. So last week, it was kind of fun. Actually, we did a little Halloween special. Marco, Matt, and I discussed our favorite scary movies and what was real versus what was, you know, what scared us as a kid versus what we thought was possible as an adult. But you know what's interesting is that kind of all led down this long-winded, weird episode that ran way over time but was super fun.
Really long.
We were talking about the actual supernatural incidents that we experienced, and one of our listeners sent us a message.
Did he send us a message from the beyond? I'm just saying.
I don't think they have Facebook in the beyond.
Okay.
But apparently they must, actually, because people say, you know, post this on your page and Jesus will bless you. So if Jesus is going to bless you based on what you post on your page, that implies Jesus has Facebook.
Well, but if you've ever watched Supernatural, apparently Jesus is this little nerdy guy named Chuck that's just around, fucking off doing shit, you know? Or if you think about it, my theory is simple. Jesus is locked up. Jesus did something a long time ago and got locked up. Now, give me a little leniency.
I'm pretty sure he did something a long time ago and got killed.
No. Listen. Because there's a whole thing about, like, you know, the whole resurrection thing, which means they just missed. They missed. He woke up. It was fine. They all had punch. It was great. Listen. He got locked up. And here's my theory behind this. Your Honor, just give me a couple minutes on this. I'll get to a point.
Because Counselor, make your point very quickly.
Very quickly, Your Honor. Thank you, sir. He's locked up. And the reason why I know he's locked up is because every motherfucker that goes to jail finds Jesus. You know what I'm saying? Every motherfucker that goes to jail, they find Jesus. That lets me know one thing. Jesus is locked up.
So when people say you have to find Jesus, that leads me to the logical question, is he hiding?
Because, in your heart.
Okay, so Nune is back with us because we are going to start this series on things you need to understand that are happening outside your world that are more important than dick and fart jokes and the U.S. presidential election. But what I wanted to share was Rob sent us a message through social media, and it was basically him sharing his paranormal interaction story. And I shit you not, dude.
Okay.
Like this one's good. We got a couple of paranormal stories, but this one I liked. So,
all right.
Rob's been a listener since damn near the beginning of War Stories, and
was Rob the one that just sent us a message about the video, about the music video?
No. Okay, I believe that's a different guy. So, which we're gonna do an episode on that.
Next time.
COVID mask music.
Yeah, that's good.
But Rob said, so he's riding his quad, and he lives in the Midwest, and they have, you know, the rock quarries that they go dormant, and then they fill in with water, and it becomes deep lake, right?
Yeah.
With a really steep edge. So he was riding his quad, and it wasn't very steep, but it was right on the river's edge, or the water's edge. And he crashes, and he bails, and he goes over into the water. But he's wrapped up in the handlebar and the brake cables and stuff and the quad's pulling him down. Right. And so he thinks, oh God, before he has a chance to free himself, he's thinking, I got to get free. And somebody reaches down into the water, grabs his hand, pulls him up out of the water onto the shore, right, away from the quad. And, you know, he hits the shore and he stands up and turns to thank whoever pulled him out of the water. And there was nobody there.
It was Jesus.
And then when he got home, he found out that many, many years prior, when the quarry was first being filled in, a kid drowned in the quarry.
I was going to say, I thought you were going to lead it with, you know, somebody pulled him out and he looked up. It was just like this one chick in a Valkyrie outfit. That, you know, saying, do you want to live forever? You know what I'm saying? From Conan. I'm just that would have been a little more magical.
Okay, the Conan ending is better, but that's like a Scooby-Doo ending. You have to ask for that shit. You have to pay extra. So Nune is here with us. Hi, Nune.
Hi, guys.
Good luck.
And Matt is not here with us, nor is John. Again, pressing matters. And, you know, affairs of state take precedent to affairs of state. So, we decided in our beginning of our series of shit that's happening around the world you should probably know about but won't be told about, we're going to talk about Armenia. Nune is Armenian. You were not born there, though, correct?
I was.
Oh, you were? Mm-hmm. Okay. So there you go. Born there. And then how old were
you? I was over here like Glendale.
5 months old.
How old?
9 months old.
9 months. So they smuggled you in.
Yeah.
All right.
I was actually born on a plane.
Nice.
No.
Just like the Chinese babies in Canada, they were coming over like in labor and then getting off the plane and giving birth to Canadian children. Yeah. Anyway, so you were born there, brought here. So you've lived basically every, you know, moment that you can remember here in the United States.
Absolutely.
Okay. But obviously with family that brought you over as a child, you're still closely tied to what's going on over there. And from my understanding, and I'm going to play dumb for the remainder, but it's pretty much a very small but very important war right now.
Yeah, we can call it a war.
I mean, I don't know what else. You could call it a lot of things, yeah. But at its heart,
it is a war, because essentially they tried to call it a territorial war, but it's not that. After every conversation, every interview, after every tweet that the presidents Aliyev and Erdogan have posted and done, it's an ethnic cleansing. It's another genocide.
So now, you said Aliyev and Erdogan. Who are Aliyev and Erdogan?
President of Azerbaijan, and Erdogan is president of Turkey.
Okay, so Aliyev is the Azerbaijani president. Mm-hmm. And what's the other? Turkey?
Erdogan is the president.
Erdogan. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Erdogan, Turkey. Mm-hmm. And Turkey has a shaky history with Armenia. So I'll confess, I know two things about, well, three things, but one I won't say. The first thing I know about Armenia is hot Armenian chicks in high school won't date guys who aren't Armenian. That was the first thing I learned in high school. Marco had the same experience because we went to the same high school and we're probably thinking of the same three Armenian chicks.
There was like five.
Yeah, but only three that we were willing to go after.
They were banging. Like banging.
So... that's the first thing I learned about Armenia, is if you want to date a hot Armenian chick, you had better be Armenian. And the second thing I learned about Armenia is that apparently, so I'll give you an example. A friend of mine was a cop in Central California, and he goes, hey, I'm gonna transfer to Glendale PD. And I said, oh, Little Armenia. And he goes, what part? And I said, no,
the whole,
just Glendale. The entire thing.
Yeah.
So you cannot swing a dead cat during a certain time of the year without hitting a car boasting two Armenian flags out the window, like the Dodgers winning the World Series right now. You know, that's just the way it is in certain areas of Southern California. But Armenia is a small country that borders Turkey and Azerbaijan and has a lot of cultural significance. But it also has a lot of tactical significance. And right now, usually you'll see the Armenian flags flying for remembrance of Armenian genocide, correct, Nune?
Yes. So every
April 24th. Now, can you briefly explain what Armenian genocide is to people who have never even heard of it?
Well, we do the remembrance on April 24th, 1915, as April 24th, 1915, because that's when the Turkish government started gathering up all the intellectuals, Armenian intellectuals, and slaughtering them and pushing them out of Turkey. So they would deport them and they would take them through desert walks and pretty much try to dry them out outside of the desert. And that started in 1915 and didn't end until 1918. So the genocide killed 1.5 million Armenians. It was the first genocide of the 20th century. And Hitler took notes on that genocide. And in one of his famous speeches, he says, who now or who today remembers the genocide of the Armenians? So
was right.
Yeah.
And Nunit, can you tell me why? What kicked that off?
It was a Christian genocide. It was because they got they hit Greece too. So Turkey wanted to get rid of all the Christians in that region. I know Greece is not in that region, but it was a Christian genocide. So the Christians were targeted, and even today they're targeted.
The Christians of Armenia. were targeted by the Turkish. And Turkey has, my understanding, is a national religion.
Muslim.
Okay. So this is basically Revenge of the Crusades.
Pretty much. Okay. Well, Erdogan got up in an interview and said, we have to continue our ancestors' vision, our grandparents' vision, and finish out what they started 100 years ago. I wonder what they're talking about.
Right. And it just so happens that the Armenian genocide was 105 years ago.
Yeah. He said this two weeks ago.
Right. So if you combine, my understanding is the original Armenian genocide, there's a couple issues with it. Number one, for my peeps that, you know, are like me and they are students of history, think of the Bataan Death March in World War II. You're talking about prisoners, soldiers, civilians, all these kind of people. And in the Bataan Death March, they were just marched to death, mm-hmm. right? That was World War II. But the Bataan Death March was not even the first death march, right? And it was not, as you said, the first genocide. Not, you know, the Jews and then the Soviet people, the purges in the Soviet Union under Stalin and the Chinese purges under Mao, that you're three and four genocides removed by the time you get to Slobodan Milosevic. So you got to go all the way back to 1915, and now you're going to get the Turkish Muslim genocide against Christian Armenians. But the second thing I know about Armenian genocide is that my understanding is Turkey does not acknowledge it.
No, Turkey is a genocide denier, and the United States also has not accepted it. France has, many other nations, superpowers essentially have. But the United States has never officially called it a genocide. Obama's platform was that he was going to call it a genocide, and he got on stage and he called it a Tsevaspanutyun, which is mass murder, basically. And he said it in Armenian. He didn't even say it in English. So that was a lie.
So I'm going to insult you, but I'm going to do it in your own language, so it's cool.
Yeah. So it was never recognized because Turkey has always been an ally of the U.S., strategic ally, war ally, oil ally, everything. So there was no way that they would recognize this little thing that affects humanity, essentially, because it's not just Armenia that's doing this right now.
So if Turkey is such an angry bird, can't we just start eating chicken? I'm just saying, I'm just putting it out there. I mean, if we're having so many problems, I mean, you eat a lot of turkey, you fall asleep.
And turkeys are so dumb, they'll put their face up to catch rain and drown. So how smart can this country be? We can defeat them.
They're not smart. They're very well.
We defeat them the third week of every November.
I'm just saying. We have our own turkey. We have our own turkey genocide, you know, during November. You know,
yeah, we do.
I don't understand.
It's symbolic. It's only symbolic. Yeah. So here's what I will say. So to draw a comparison for the listeners is Turkey's denial and the U.S.'s failure to really call a spade a spade, right? So they're saying, oh, yep, mistakes were made is kind of the excuse they're giving. It would be the equivalent of the U.S.'s official position on Nazi Germany being – well, there wasn't really a Holocaust, but maybe they didn't treat Jews the way they should have, and a bunch of them were killed unnecessarily. The level of downplaying of Armenian genocide, 1.2 million people, you're talking 1.5, I apologize. But bear in mind, when Germany was at its peak of power during the World War II Holocaust, they had Poland, right? They had France. Right. They had Germany. They had Austria. They had this large geographic area from which they could pull, draw, and remove the objects of their ire, which were Jews, homosexuals, you know, gypsies, all that kind of stuff, because it wasn't just Jews. Yeah. They had all these different countries. Right. But you're talking about Turkey and Armenia is a much smaller geographical region. So it's kind of like 1.5 million doesn't quite address the fact that percentage wise, that is a huge chunk of the population of Armenia compared to the Jews taken out of Europe in the Holocaust of World War II. And it's not to compare numbers. It's to say that they're apples and oranges, because the percentage wise, 1.5 million people is a shitload of people.
Yep. Well, there's only 3 million Armenians in Armenia right now. So if you can imagine, 1.5 million of them
back then.
But yeah.
Right. So now that's where Armenian genocide comes into play, and that's where Turkey comes into play, because Turkey basically has a hard-on for Armenia.
Right.
But then you get to Azerbaijan, which, I mean, most people think Azerbaijan's a cologne. I know I wore Azerbaijan for Men in high school.
I was more of a high karate guy, you know what I'm saying?
I thought you were a cool water.
I was a cool water guy. I was a cool water guy, and then I tried Aspen for a little bit, and it just wasn't working for me.
So enter Azerbaijan.
Enter Azerbaijan, this baby nation that just came into play as basically Turkey's satellite nation.
Okay.
Erdogan's lapdog is Aliyev. This is what it ends up being. They don't make any decisions on their own unless Daddy Erdogan says, this is what we're going to do today. They don't have any culture. They don't have any history. They are in this region. And the problem is the region. The region that they're supposedly fighting for is what they want. But those lands have been Armenia's lands for over 7,000 years. So
are the Azerbaijanis considered a tribe or some sort of subculture of Armenia?
The people that occupied that space were Azeris, were Armenians, were Turks. It goes, I mean, I'm not a historian. Disclaimer, you would need like multiple PhDs in history to even understand the length of the history that goes on in that area. But it's right now, the region that they're fighting for is the Nagorno-Karabakh area, which is populated by 98% Armenians. Okay. So when Stalin gifted it to Azerbaijan, the Armenians still stayed there. So what happened, so that region was there and Stalin gifted it to Azerbaijan.
So hey, here's a piece of a country in the Soviet bloc. It's yours. Yeah. You can have it. Happy birthday.
Yeah, pretty much. So like the Armenian presence in the South Caucasus, which is where Armenia is. If I say Caucasus, white.
It's the mountain, the Caucasus Mountains.
Americans
yes.
think, are like, what did you say? Something hot? So that's not right. That's not what we mean when we say Caucasus. It is the mountains, and that's where the Armenians are. And it goes all the way back to 5th century BC, before Christ. So right. The Armenian kingdom at that time, it stretched from the Caspian Sea to the Mediterranean, and that includes Syria. So that's 7,000 years of history where Armenians are living on this land. In the early 18th century, the Ottoman Empire invaded, and the region of Nagorno-Karabakh, which is also Artsakh, which is where they're fighting right now, it was captured. It remained in their capture until World War I in 1918, when Stalin came in and occupied Nagorno-Karabakh. And then in 1923, he gifted it, like, you know, dictators do whimsically, gift a piece of land to this baby nation that's we call Azerbaijan. So
now when were they formed? Do you know?
Azerbaijan?
Yeah, roughly. Like mid 20th century?
1918.
That's it.
1918. Coca-Cola is older than Azerbaijan.
All right.
Yes. So for the next 70 years.
So when Azerbaijan was founded, Coca-Cola still had cocaine in it. Is what
it did.
Saying.
Yeah. All right. Talking about that.
Yeah, I love callbacks. So.
Well, they lived like this until the collapse of the Soviet Union in the end of 1989. And then during this time, the Armenians of Nagorno-Karabakh, they called for independence. Or they wanted to join Armenia, but the Azeris wouldn't allow it. So what happened was between that time, from 1991 to 1993, hundreds of thousands of people were killed. Like, just war, nonstop war. Armenians won the war. They took back the land, but no one recognized it. So then they called for a referendum, and it was approved by 99.8% of the population. And the UN didn't accept it. So the people chose democracy, and the rest of the world ignored it. To this day, they didn't accept it. So here we are again with the aggressors like Turkey pushing this ethnic cleansing agenda. And now we have deportations, we have displacements on their side too. It's not just the Armenians that are suffering, the Azeris are suffering too. It's just that they're so brainwashed. Their government propaganda is out of this world. I mean, I can't even, if you show them proof of something, they'll look at you and be like, no, here's the map that was made by Azerbaijan. That's it. That's all they believe.
So what year was the initial fighting and conflict started?
Oh, it depends on how far back you go back. But this one. This
no, I mean, between Azerbaijan and Armenia, this most recent one.
This most recent one started September 27th, 2020.
Right. Okay. So this is, we're talking, this is like.
A month ago, today.
Right. And it's not a, it's not, it's an actual shooting war, right? There's military involvement. And I'm trying to get this because it's not even touching the news anywhere.
I wish it was just shooting, Tom. So if you're watching mainstream media, you probably have no idea what is going on. And the Armenian people are facing basically another genocide. The attacks on this last one that started on September 27th were unprovoked. And it was from Azerbaijan, backed by Turkey. And every interview and every tweet that Aliyev and Erdogan have posted has, they pretty much say that this is what our goal is. We're going to take Nagorno-Karabakh and then we're going to take Armenia. So they're guising it under Armenians are occupying land. So, but Armenians are not occupying land. They've been there for thousands of years.
Right. So I guess the next logical step is, so if you have literal facing a genocide, you're talking about military involvement, you're talking about large scale operations, you're talking about innocent women and children in the path of bullets and bombs. Why does this matter? Now, I'll back everybody up and remind them that if you don't like the idea that Azerbaijan is spontaneously attacking the people of Armenia, remember the fact that the only reason Azerbaijan is doing it is because they're backed by Turkey. And Turkey is tacitly backed by the United States. So even though we don't agree with it, we still haven't told Turkey to knock it the fuck off.
Hey, T-Bone, can you go a little bit more in depth of why they're so backed by the United States for the people that may not know?
So, well, that would be a whole other episode, but
I know.
Turkey's strategic value during the Cold War, especially. Turkey represented a country that hated the Soviets more than it hated the U.S. And you could back any country, right? So let's go back to the Soviet war in Afghanistan. We're at war in Afghanistan. We've been at war in Afghanistan almost longer than the Soviets were. The Soviets went to war in Afghanistan for a particular reason. And we, as the U.S., we decided we hate the Soviets so much that we backed the Mujahideen. And Mujahideen were freedom fighters against the Soviets. And one of the most famous Mujahideen was Osama bin Laden. So we funded and backed Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan against the Soviets until we didn't have the Soviets to fight anymore. In which case, guess what? The Mujahideen also doesn't have the Soviets to fight anymore. And now the Mujahideen decides, well, since we don't have to fight the Soviets, let's fight the real enemy, the dumb shits that gave us money and arms. We're going to fight the Americans. And Osama bin Laden started bombing World Trade Centers and Navy ships. That's the significance to me, is you're talking about American involvement, tacit American involvement, because we kind of back up Turkey because Turkey kind of had our backs against the Soviets. But other than strategic missile defense, I'm not sure I can understand a real good reason for the U.S. backing Turkey to the hilt on this issue. And maybe Nune can come up with a better excuse, but I can't.
No, but to make matters worse, in the first 2 weeks of the war, it was found that Erdogan paid 2,000 mercenaries and Syrian mercenaries, and we can call it like it is, terrorists, to fight the Armenian soldiers who are 18, 19 years old. They're children. So a population of 3 million is fighting against Turkey, population of 90 million, and Azerbaijan population of 10 million. So that's 3 million versus 100 million, plus paid for, contracted ISIS radicalists who tried to overthrow Syria. So the Free Syrian Army, essentially, which is trained by the U.S., I don't know if you guys know. It was trained by the CIA. And they are fighting Armenian soldiers, Armenian teenage soldiers. So our little children are fighting terrorists when they should be at home studying for finals.
And so, for the people that listen to our regular War Stories podcast, you'll remember John's episode in Afghanistan where they faced 80 Chechen highly trained special forces against John's squad of 8 men. And our most recent episode in which we discussed the amount of people paid to come across the border from Pakistan to fight in Afghanistan. These countries are not above hiring private military groups, mercenaries. And this is, you're talking about highly trained, highly skilled, highly funded men who are very good at what they do, yeah, fighting against the farmer's sons and the shoemaker's sons who are willing to pick up a rifle and defend their country because they believe in it. Not because they're trained to do it or paid to do it, but because they believe in it.
National pride.
Right. Now, that goes back to my original question is, why does this matter on the world stage?
Well, Armenians have been protesting for the past month. And I want to highlight the peaceful part because there was 150,000 Armenians protesting in Los Angeles 2 weeks ago and not a single arrest, not a single violent act. Meanwhile, down the street in downtown LA, when Lakers won the championships, there was rioting, looting, arrests. But a little land in the Caucasus with peaceful protesters all over the world is insignificant to the rest of the world. So we did this whole thing. We gathered from all over the world, and CBS did a snippet on the protest, like just showed the protest. And then they had the audacity to interview an Azeri about what's going on. Do you guys understand the magnitude of that? That's like right. The equivalent of covering a BLM protest and asking a Ku Klux Klan member what they think about it. That's what CBS.
I'm pretty sure I can guess their opinion.
Well, we found out later that they were paid off through the Azeri propaganda machine. So the budgeted amount that they have to buy off the media is $3 billion. So they paid off media, PR firms, and basically anything you can think of to push their agendas forward. So they protested at CBS. The Armenians then went to CBS and were like, you need to drop this firm, to which they were greeted with really nasty, disgusting comments from CBS employees who told them to go back to their country if they wanted it so badly. They were later fired. But this is what...
Well, there's that.
Yeah, well, the rest of the world doesn't give a shit about what's happening in this insignificant little land because it's not directly affecting them.
But correct me if I'm wrong, it's essentially a holdover of a Cold War flare-up, right? So if you have a country that is historically backed by, or a region that's historically backed by Cold War interests on the Soviet side, even though the Soviet Union isn't around anymore, it's much the same as what's going on in Syria, where the United States is backing the rebels and the former Soviet Union, Russia, Putin, is backing the Syrian government. Well, we're backing the Turkish government. And if push comes to shove, you may see the Soviet backing, or I should say Soviet because there's no such thing.
Putin.
But you could see Putin backing the Armenian interests?
Well, they have the Minsk OSCE group has an agreement with Armenia that if they do hit Armenia, then Russia gets involved. But right. because Optsakh is not considered Armenia because the UN never recognized it, they can't really get involved. But they got involved with Macron, the president of France, and it was with Trump, Macron, and Putin. They all got involved and they said, we need a ceasefire. First ceasefire breached within 2 minutes. Second ceasefire breached within 4 minutes. Third ceasefire breached in 45 minutes, but they had a scheduled tweet right when the ceasefire was about to go into effect. They tweeted it. It hadn't even begun. Lying, saying that Armenia has already breached the ceasefire, so we're going to go ahead and shoot. They deleted the tweet, came back 5 minutes later, retweeted the same thing, saying that Armenia started shooting, so we're responding back.
So the guy in charge of Azerbaijani social media who tweeted that 5 minutes before the attack response was probably executed for being a dumb shit. So that there's that. So that's good for him.
Or maybe not. You never know. Maybe he was awarded, because I don't know if you guys remember, but that guy who killed the Armenian while in his sleep when he went back to Azerbaijan, he was given an award and he has like a day and a celebration.
Well, so that's what I thought the geopolitical interesting factor was and why people should pay attention, because in a world where you're so wrapped up in who's going to win the U.S. presidential election, you're also not paying attention to the fact that these historical peace deals are being brokered in the Middle East, and yet shit's going to hell on the Pakistan, Azerbaijan, Armenia front, where you could end up seeing a flare up where Putin and Russia are backing Armenia because shit spills out beyond this region. Or let's face it, Putin could just get finally too pissed off and say, no, I don't care what the agreement covers. We're altering the deal, to quote Darth Vader. You know, so you could see a place where the U.S. and Russia are put again at odds, because we're backing a country, and if I'm not mistaken, Turkey has nuclear capabilities.
Absolutely. And Israel is supplying them too.
So if Turkey has nuclear capabilities and they're backed by the U.S. and Turkey decides to get a wild hair up their ass and start lobbing nukes, then Armenia, backed by Putin, is going to start getting retaliatory strikes. So you could end up with a small nuclear war at its best, a small nuclear war on the borders of some countries that you've never heard of, or at worst, World War III. Mm-hmm. If it goes that far.
Yeah. Well, they have an agenda, so everything is planned out. And if you even just go on Twitter and read Aliyev's tweets and Erdogan's tweets, they have this planned out. It's just not going according to their schedule, because they thought they would take Artsakh within 4 days. And right. I believe the last map that Armenia released, they hadn't, I think it was only 10% of land that they had gotten. So right. I don't know. Something needs to be done. Otherwise, there are way too many lives being lost.
So these are, that's why we did this episode. I think these are things that our audience would like to be aware of. If you want to be more well-informed, you want to be a student of history, but also a student of the future, because those who don't know their history are doomed to repeat it. You know, Marco, this ties into what we're going to talk about your home country of Venezuela, because one of the things that I think people at least heard a little bit more about than maybe what's happening in Armenia, but only from the perspective that we had direct diplomatic ties with Venezuela. But Venezuela is right now in a state of crisis. almost civil war slash revolution slash it's reached critical mass. And I think we didn't pay attention enough to where it reached critical mass, that if we don't start paying attention to something like Armenia, it could get worse. It could reach a point where it's worse than Venezuela.
Yeah. I mean, Venezuela's is a whole different, it's a whole different get down. I mean, we're going to do a whole episode on that, just because Venezuela is at the point now where, you could say a revolution. You could say that a revolution is needed, but the sheer instinct of survival has now drawn people, or not drawn people, but forced people to flee, to massively flee the country, you know, because the lack of resources, as you know, Thomas, we've been friends forever, and I have 80% of my family still there. So it's not one of those things where, you know, I'm in the U.S. now, and my family, you know, I'm very removed. I didn't move up to the States until I was just before I was 11 years old. So, but it's, you know, things like this, like, it's great to have Nune on, because we're so caught up in our day-to-day lives here and what we're being shown, what we're being presented, you know, what we're, you know, the tidbits that they want us to see, you know, but, in the world stage, and the world is a stage, there's always, everything's a puzzle piece, and you need to know what is happening and who we as a country, because you can't say, well, I'm not supporting this president, I'm not supporting this candidate, I'm not supporting this, whatever it is that you're supporting and not supporting. The world sees us as a unit, a cohesive unit. You're right. Part of this world. You're part of this, whether you want to say this is my president or not my president, whatever your political standing is, we, and I do count myself because, yes, you know, I became an American citizen years ago. We are a nation, and we are a people. We are a world people. And I'm glad that we had her on, because there's a lot of things I did not know about the region. You know, I thought someone was pissed off because they forgot to bring the punch, you know, saying you invite people to your birthday party, and that one motherfucker forgets the cookies, and you wanted cookies, and you're like, fuck that guy, you know? And
it's like, damn it, birthday. You had one job.
You had one job, and it's my birthday, and I'll cry if I want to. But I thought, you know, you never know. It all goes back to food. It always goes back to food.
But it's interesting, because I think that with Venezuela, it's direct ties, it's direct conflict, but at the same time, there's a certain side of Venezuela that's backed by the U.S. and a certain side of Venezuela that's backed by Russia. And much the same way, there's a certain part of, we're still fighting the Cold War.
They both want to jockey for the petroleum, for the oil, you know, right. for gasoline. And that's what we hear about it. And that's what we heard more about Venezuela, in the United States here. Because when the shit really started kicking off, then you saw the gas pump, you know, the gas pump crisis go up. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's right. Like, you know, shit kicks off in you know, right outside of Armenia, and you're not seeing, you know, gas prices go up. You're not seeing product go up. You're not seeing, you know, Zanku's not going up in price. Thank God. You know, it's like, you know,
but that's magic, you're right, because whatever comes out of Armenia, it hasn't affected the American bottom line, the American pocketbook.
Right. No. And here's the thing is,
Oh, really?
Please.
Oh, 150 million of our U.S. dollars has gone to Azerbaijan over the past 2 years. And we were supposed to receive a ledger of where that money went. Needless to say, we didn't receive the ledger. And now Armenia is fighting drones and air, what are they, F-16s? With machine guns.
Wow. So people need to start paying attention, because this is also a presidential election cycle where I haven't heard dick about foreign policy.
For
the first time.
He's been talking about this at his rallies. He's been right. Saying, oh, I saw Armenians. And you know, mm-hmm. The Armenians are getting excited. He mentioned Armenians on TV, but he didn't do anything. Secretary Pompeo was supposed to broker, the third ceasefire was brokered by Pompeo, and Trump right. Was involved. It was broken.
So they're trying, but.
Are they?
If they're trying from the perspective of they're not necessarily doing, bringing all their forces to bear. It's kind of like their parents when they're like, okay, the kids really do need to work this out for themselves, but I'm going to at least level the playing field as much as I can. And then finally, at some point, mom and dad have to step in and lay the smack down. But the problem is if we can't figure it out with, you know, gentle parental advice and kind of figuring who's right and who's wrong, then we're going to end up in a situation where mom and dad are actually pissed at each other and going to fight.
Pompeo tweeted that this region needs to come up with a truce. A truce.
Yeah. Well,
is that really the word you're going to use right now? They literally can't stop shooting to come collect their dead bodies.
No, wow. No. What happens, worst case scenario, what happens if Armenia loses that region?
They take off. And then they try to take Armenia because Erdogan's vision, which he expressed many, many times over, was to have a clear and free road from Turkey to Azerbaijan, all through the Caspian.
So it comes down to they want to unite, essentially. They want to border up. They want to unite those two countries, and Armenia is in the middle of it.
It is the most Christian nation on the planet, in the middle of all Muslim nations.
So you could be looking at what they're saying is a war for oil, but in fact is only a guise for religious warfare.
Much.
See, I learned a lot, and I hope everybody listening learned a lot, because
thank you for educating me.
Yeah. I used to say that we could all agree on a couple of things. Is that number one, everybody likes Kool-Aid, and number two, nobody likes Armenians, because clearly they get shit on by history
time and time again.
Right now I know Armenians that are like, man, Armenians are assholes.
You know, it's like one of those things where you can say it about your own people.
Exactly. It's like veterans.
Do you dare say that?
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Veterans are like, the Marine Corps eats crayons. And then some civilian comes along and says, fuck the Marines. And like, oh no, I'll kill you for that.
Yeah. It's one of those.
You can't use that word. Only we can use that word. So, Nune, I appreciate it. Again, if you want to find out more about what Nune does, she came on a couple of weeks ago and extolled the virtues, or the scientific virtues, of CBD, because it was pretty misunderstood. And it led us to actually partnering up with a company, Brothers in Arms CBD, and they are available through our website. You can support War Stories. But if you're somebody who uses CBD, or you have a dog, or you have a grandma, or you have a friend who's just got diagnosed with cancer and you want to try and help them out, or you get somebody who's got arthritis and you're like, screw it, let's see if it works for them, go to our website, click on their link under our store, and that'll take you to the Brothers in Arms. All your purchases give us the credit for it, which helps support us. But you can also buy your t-shirts and your challenge coins and your Ranger panties, one of these sweet sweatshirts that I'm wearing right now, which helps support us and keeps us going. We're working on one of our listeners who, the guy's awesome. He did our 3D graphic rendering of our new logo for War Stories. He's going to do a locker room podcast, rendering, so that hopefully we can do some hats or something with the locker room, logo on it. And believe it or not, I have an artist working on, we took an animal personality test, and so they're going to do caricatures of us, the Matt and Marco and me and John, and so we're going to put that art up and see if we can figure it out into some sort of a t-shirt. That'll be fun. Nuno, where can people find you and find out more information about what's going on in Armenia?
You guys can follow me on Instagram at Straight Off the Needle. And I'm posting a lot of what's going on Twitter.
Straight off the needle, dog.
Damn, girl.
I'm guessing she's talking about threading eyebrows.
No, I don't do eyebrows. Needles.
Well, someone does yours, girl. That shit is
fire. Fire, girl.
By Carmen Teat. I'm just kidding.
Actually, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you, once we're off the air, my wife wants to know, how much is Botox?
Oh, dollars.
I don't know what that means, but cool. We'll figure it out. Okay. So people can follow you. Where can they find out more, or how can they help if they want to support?
Armenia Fund, at Armenia Fund or ArmeniaFund.com is the resource where the Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan has asked for the diaspora and anybody else who's willing to donate through the Armenia Fund. So if you are able to, you can. There are outlets such as the Armenian Report, you guys can follow, and something called Zartonk Media, Z-A-R-T-O-N-K Media, all on Instagram. And they are reporting every moment what's going on. Ben Swan did a piece on it. You guys can, I don't know if you guys follow him. He's an investigative journalist as well. And just whatever you're reading, make sure it's a source that's not backed by or paid for by Turkish or Azeri propaganda. And you can trace them very easily. If you go to Wikipedia right now and you Google the region, it will tell you Azerbaijan owns it and it'll throw you off. Do not be a wiki researcher. Go in depth, see who these people are.
Right. And then people can follow you on social media for all of their medical needs and other things too. You get like a whole beauty, whole health, like you're all over it.
Yes, I have a wellness page. It is my clinic. It's at the Stepanian Clinic, T-H-E, Stepanian, S-T-E-P-A-N-Y-A-N, clinic. That's my Instagram. So that's the Instagram page for all the beauty and aesthetic stuff, wellness stuff, and then the political and activism and patient advocacy, nurse advocacy, and all of that. Professional stuff is straight off the needle.
Now, I'm going to straight up – go ahead.
To our listeners, no creeping. You know, with no creeping, we stand by a very, very simple motto here at Locker Room Podcast. No dick pics.
That's right.
I want to hear no bullshit about, I heard her on the Locker Room Podcast and she sounded this way. So I had to send her a dick. It does not work.
No.
Do not send her dick. She doesn't want your penis pic. Stop it. just stop it. Cut the shit off.
Just boys, let's just explain. No one wants a dick pic.
No.
And let alone an unsolicited. From the
female perspective as well. we don't want it.
Dude, when most guys catch themselves in the mirror, they look like they were surprised in a horror movie. And then that's just me and my shit. Nobody wants to see it, not even you. So don't send nobody else a pic because I guarantee you it's not working.
Honestly, I'm going to tell you this. They're not impressed.
Right.
They're not impressed. So stop. Cut that shit out. Like Thomas said, boys, how about we act like man?
Yes. You can't spell the word manners without the word man. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, that's cute.
Thank you, Vince Vaughn, Fred Claus. Margaret, do you have anything as we close out? You can leave us a voicemail. I got a very funny voicemail. I'm not even going to play it, but basically it was the voicemail equivalent of fuck yeah, motherfuckers, over and over. Telling us and so I appreciate that. I'm not going to play that, especially because he gave out his own phone number during the voicemail. So I can't play that, but I appreciate it. Our voicemail, if you do want to leave us a voicemail, 626-692-5122, and you can always send us an email at lockerroommailbag@gmail.com. you can reach us through social media. Marco, do you have anything before we say goodnight to the lovely Renee?
Yes. You know you're an adult you're starting to adult when it's 4:30 in the morning and you say, wow, this is an early morning, as opposed to, whoa, this is a late night.
That's 100% true. And until our next episode, we will see you in the locker room.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.